powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Actually, it's hour number one today, where the first 2 hours were the huddle, technically speaking. We had a chance to catch up with Russell Wilson about an hour ago. We're going to play you a couple of cuts from that interview. But just to start with here, and you know, I want to ask Stacy this, because Jake, you know him real well, so your vision on this, your perspective is a little clouded.
Well, it's a little skewed, yes.
Yeah, it is. You're biased towards him.
Okay.
When he sits down and he talks to us, what impression do you get from him? Like, if you go home tonight and your roommate says, hey, what's talking to Russell Wilson like? How would you describe that? How would you describe him?
I think he seems like a very cool and collected person. I think he seems he's able to make himself very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest knock against him has been, at least from like a national media standpoint, think of Will Brinson, right? Putting out that video of him being mic'd up. I think the biggest knock has been like, well, he's kind of robotic or whatever. But I think up close and personal, when you're talking to him, at least in a setting like this, you realize, no, it's just kind of a mindset where, as a veteran, you recognize all the pressures that are on you.
Yeah.
And you just choose which ones you let concern you. I think it's kind of a tangible feeling when you're sitting across from him, because I haven't interviewed him yet in this kind of setting at all. And so it was really fascinating to see, when he says he believes in that kind of mindset, you can tell physically in just the way he presents himself.
Yeah, there's some sincerity there. I think that when he first got here, given that he was the young, if you took all the core players in 2012 and 13, he was the youngest of them, he and Bobby Wagner. Mm-hmm. As the quarterback, he felt like he had a lot to live up to, and he did. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of responsibility on his shoulders, and he probably just said, all right, when I go up there to Seattle, I'm just going to say the right thing for a while. And that's what he's done, and that's why people accuse him of being robotic. And maybe he is to a certain extent, but there is a human being behind there, for sure.
Yeah, I think he's just really, really professional.
Like, yeah, but you feel something unique from him as opposed to back then, or even 3-4 years ago, I think.
I think looking back at it, like, honestly, if you go and watch and pull up on YouTube Russell Wilson talking in before his state championship game, like, you're going to hear Russell sound very similar to what you hear him now, and people perceive that as robotic, and it's just very much of who he's always been through NC State, through Wisconsin. But when you talk about the difference between those moments and early on in his career, yeah, he absolutely, I believe, felt like he had to do and say the right things and be the company man, so to speak.
And
right?
Now that all these other guys are gone, like Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, leaders from before,
right?
Now that it's definitively his team, he can essentially say and do whatever he wants. He won't,
true,
but he could if he wanted to, and you can tell he's a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, and I would agree with that for sure. And just knowing him behind the scenes, like, there's two sides of this. Is from a quarterback perspective to the media, to me, it's checking off the boxes. Like, and I know that can be frustrating to media and maybe fans, like, oh, just be real with us and this and that. There's a lot more harm than good that can be done when, you know,
when
like,
you just be completely
used to,
Baker
Mayfield.
There used to be an old Dave Chappelle the skit called When Keeping It Real Goes Wrong. And that, more often than not, is what happens when players keep it real. And when you want to just look, I'm going to say positive things. I'm going to, you know, keep things in perspective. But I also look at the interview that we had, and you got a true insight into Russ and how he thinks, and keeping things, boiling it down to, what do you say, the simple truths, right? The simple truths, and not making things bigger than what they are, because it's so easy for players and for coaches, especially, to go into every week and ride the highs and the lows of the season. And that's where you get caught up in a lot of stuff, and that's where you can get derailed.
All right, let's start with cut number one. He's talking about not dwelling on the last game.
You know, for me to be able to compartmentalize that, and also to be able to do that week in and week out, I think gives you the best chance to be successful, and I think it also gives your team the best chance to be successful. And that's the only option. Like you said, failure is not an option. I think You know, if you love winning, you can't focus on what happened, why you lost. You got to focus on why you're going to win next.
That's something that is really a foreign idea to me. Like, you got to me, you go back and you look at the tape for a reason.
Yeah.
Because you want to know what went wrong. I'm sure he does that. It's just not really how he describes that process.
Yeah.
I read it as not carrying over any feeling that it gives you. That
correct.
Taking knowledge from it and not a kind of regret from it.
Yes. So it not taking the emotion, right? You take the emotion out of it. You dive into the simple truths of what happened in that game. You look at it from a very analytical point of view and not an emotional point of view. And then you move on. I take this as a something that I had to learn, you know, in my young married life was when I was dealing with adversity or success as an athlete, you know, practice, games, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes I would carry that emotion with me. And I think everybody can relate to this. I took work with me home. And also, you know, with my kids now, if I'm feeling tired, if I'm feeling emotional, if I'm feeling upset, I know that the moment, or at least I try to, I want to compartmentalize my work versus my home life and not carry the, if there's any negativity, I don't want to carry that home with me. I want to be happy with my kids and play with my kids and all that. And I think for, you know, just for Russell in that sense, it's moving on to the next game and not letting every week weigh on you emotionally, because this game is, it's too big of a toll to take on to have those 17 weeks of emotional baggage that can go along with it.
Let's go to cut number two here. When he's with Brian Schottenheimer, he tends to ask a lot of questions.
I always ask the questions, why? Like, why am I doing this? But he's been great. He knows the game. He's been in the game for so long. Obviously, his dad, who's such a great coach, should be a Hall of Fame coach, in my opinion. And then also with Brian, you know, Schottenheimer, he's coached so many great quarterbacks as well. So it was great. I mean, we really shared a lot of time. And he asked me why I do this and why I do that. So it's been cool. It's been a great journey. And Coach Schottenheimer's great. Obviously, Heaps is the guru, too, as well. And so it's been fun.
He's that kid in the back of the class who just goes, why?
Excuse me, you didn't collect our homework? No! I want to hear more about him just questioning Jake and this infamous workout at UCLA. What was the deal? You got to go in there and prove yourself to Russell Wilson.
Well, it's funny because he acts like he was just like, well, Jake, why? It was more like, why am I doing this? Like, that's you know, kind of the whole thought process. And it wasn't like a bad situation, but it was one of those deals where as a coach, also I was like, okay, this is a great reminder to me is to, like, I better know what I'm talking about and I better know exactly the whys of football. And for Russell and for any player, understanding why you're doing something and not just being told to do something.
You should say, because I said so. That's why.
Well, exactly. But that's a lot of coaches' mentality is, well, I said so. But that's wrong. You want your players to know the why so that they can understand the game better. And then that way they can be students of the game themselves and they can start recognizing situations and really acting like a coach on the field.
See, what I was thinking when he said that was kind of the same thing, that I wonder if knowing the fundamentals of why you have a certain approach to even the little things, people talk about when you become a great improviser, it's probably because you know something like the back of your hand. You know exactly why a certain play is carried out this way, or exactly why you need to, I don't know, stand a certain way when you make that throw.
Yeah, if you
explain, when you break it down, it becomes like second knowledge.
If you explain something to him, he might be able to do something with that knowledge that even you haven't thought of.
Correct. Right.
And if you tell him the why, then he can take it and run.
Yep. Exactly. And let me give you a perfect example in terms of X's and O's, okay? In a game where you see Russell Wilson now, he is at the line of scrimmage, he's taking games over, he's able to call things on his own. Well, if he was told his entire career, hey, we run this trap running play, just call the play, because I said so. He's never learned at that moment why you call that play, and so therefore he would never be able to audible in a situation. Well, he knows that you run a trap play, you want to run it to the 3 technique on the defensive line because it's easier to trap and get that player. Well, now he's able to recognize that on the field and say, hey, we've got a perfect trap running play look for from the defensive line, I can check to that. So that's where that why of understanding the whys of football can evolve a player from just being your average rookie who's just running through the motions, a coach telling him what to do, to now being able to evolve and do it himself.
And when
Shoddy's
headset goes out and Russell's got to be the offensive coordinator calling his own plays
Exactly.
Now he's ready.
Exactly.
Let's hear one more here. I asked him about winning the MVP and whether or not that's important to him.
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think winning MVP is a great thing just because it's one of those things that you know, growing up as a kid, being 5'10", 5'11", from Richmond, Virginia, people thought I couldn't play football. I think you're not just setting a precedent for yourself, but you're setting it for others. And I think also, too, it's a testament to all the hard work you put in with the guru and other people. You know, when you think about, you know, all the hard work you put into things, you want to be successful. You know, that's a sign of winning, you know, MVP, in my opinion. That's how I look at it. It's winning football.
Were you initially surprised to see him answer, yes, it is?
Yes, because shocked.
I was. I thought he would say, you
is
know,
that the
I really
first
just
time
care.
He's come out and actually, like,
he's
said
copped
that.
To
well,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I expected him to just say, I care about winning. But then when he started explaining it, I thought, oh, well, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. I would also care about representation, and I would care about, you know, not only a great personal accomplishment, but if you win MVP, it usually means your team's pretty good.
But the
And outside of that, it means that somewhere there's some, like, you know, 17-year-old kid that's thinking, oh, like, there's an example I can think of. It's like when I read about someone from, like, my hometown doing something.
The generic answer to that question would have been, well, you know, it's all about the team and one game at a time, and I don't pay attention to things like that. But it does matter. But it matters for reasons maybe you wouldn't think.
Yeah, necessarily selfishly, but also in a way it is selfish because it is a validating thing of everything
that you've had to
overcome. But I think the other part of it is what do we know about Russell Wilson? One of the fundamental truths of what we know about Russ? He is one of the most elite competitors you've ever been around. And so does it, like, from a competitive standpoint, does he want to be recognized as the MVP of the league? You bet he does.
Yeah.
Absolutely he does. So I thought that was pretty cool that he, you know, came out and, you know, kind of explained why that would matter to him.
Do you think we're going to talk about Lamar Jackson coming up in about 5 or 6 minutes here. First, though, we're in four down territory.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Is this the last chance saloon for CJ Procise?
I think that for CJ Procise, it is. And here's why I think that. One, he's coming up on his contract year. But two, this is a situation where they have strung him along over the last couple years and have always been hoping for something out of him, hoping that he can stay healthy and get greatness out of him. Well, actually, this year he has been able to stay healthy, and they still haven't found a role on the team for him because guys like Chris Carson have been elite. Rashad Penny, they drafted him in the first round, and he has shown flashes. They've never really shown a conscientious effort to get CJ Procise out onto the field and involved. And so for me, I think he could even have a great couple games, and I don't know if this is gonna be a continued run for CJ Procise on the Seattle
Seahawks. Even with a great couple of games,
I think so. I just don't see it moving forward past this.
Well, we don't really need. We're not asking for more than just this year right now, though. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not more. But I just think that this is CJ's Procise's opportunity to show the rest of the league, what his value is and what he can do.
Second down. Hey, Stacey.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
What
should fans know about this Panthers defense?
You know, I'll go back to what Joe Person was pointing out in his interview with us, that this is a defense that last year ranked 27th in sacks and committed to revamping their pass rush. So they switched in the offseason from 4-3 to something with the more traditional 3-4 elements under defensive coordinator Eric Washington. And as a result, they're now second in the league. I think they have 47 sacks. They're tied for second. And they were leading the league for a while. So they're really effective at getting to the quarterback, getting hands on the quarterback. What they've struggled with, though, is the run. So I think it's important for fans to know that they're 29th against the run. It's their greatest weakness defensively. And for a team like Seattle that just lost their backup running back, Rashad Penny, or I should say second running back, Rashad Penny, you're bringing out CJ Procise, who has had very limited snaps this year, has been a healthy scratch in a couple games. This is probably a really good game for for him to get some experience. Even then, though, I would expect the vast majorities of the carries to go to Chris Carson. I think this is going to be another game where you see Chris Carson just take off.
Third down. What makes Panthers quarterback, now starting quarterback, Kyle Allen dangerous?
Well, the interesting part about Kyle Allen is he has had an up and down season. And obviously this is his first year as a starting quarterback in this league, a guy who was an undrafted free agent who's had to really work hard to make this roster. And we saw that, you know, he was on a streak there for four games winning in a row. Now they're on a five-game losing streak. Kyle Allen is a player that, when comfortable in the pocket, he can make every throw. I mean, he really can. When on time and in rhythm, he can make every throw. And at times, this Carolina Panthers offense has actually functioned better than what they did without Cam Newton there. And so I think that Kyle Allen is a guy that you have to take seriously. If you can pressure him and force him into rush decisions, I think that's where his youth and inexperience really shows up. So they absolutely need to be taking Kyle Allen seriously, despite the fact that he's not a household name or a guy that has played very much in this league.
Fourth down. Panthers head coach Ron Rivera fired last week. How does a fired head coach impact the locker room?
It can do, honestly, one of two things. It can be a rallying cry. It can be something where, Tom, I think you asked this, was it last week or maybe 2 weeks ago? It was last week when Ron Rivera first got fired. Is, can this rally a team? And the answer is yes, if it's the right coach, if it's the right individual that is well-respected on the staff and all that, they can rally the troops. It seems to me in this case here with the Carolina Panthers that that's not the case. You look at the head coach that's there right now. He is a guy that wasn't even on the staff. This is his first year on the staff. He was with the Jacksonville Jaguars 2 years ago. And so it's an interesting decision to make him the interim head coach. And you had a player, as Dave Wyman had talked about earlier on the huddle, that you had one of your own players calling you out, the defensive coordinator, about how bad of decisions that you're making, in-game adjustments, all that are leading to touchdowns. There's a lot of dysfunction there with the Carolina Panthers, and I don't think this is a rallying cry situation, that they've got the right guy to turn this whole thing around. I think Carolina is just trying to survive through the year.
Yeah, we're going to get to what's on tap here in just a moment, and let's come back to something Dave Wyman was saying. I mean, he's right. There are guys on that team who don't want to look bad, and B, are still playing for paychecks out there. Mm-hmm. But more to your point, Jake, it's not like they're not going to get paid if they lose games, right? They're going to go out there and they're going to try and save face. But if they're not inspired in some way to go out there and really just take it, I could see the Seahawks really running roughshod all over them.
It's set up that way.
Yeah.
It is very much set up that way. And I know people are saying, well, you know, Seattle never plays a game. You know, they always play close games. But if you do take control early and you're able to get up, let's say, two scores from the mm-hmm. get-go, I don't think Carolina has it in them to come back from that moment.
So, I don't either. And I'm not going to be mad if this team wins by a point. Whatever. I don't care. Well, I guarantee you that right now.
Yeah.
When we come in on Monday, I won't be upset if they only win by one point.
There's enough good on Carolina.
Sure, it's an East Coast start. It's a road game.
You've got Christian McCaffrey, a good pass rush.
Yeah, there's some good players there. And this is a team that, you've played them a million times over the years. They played a lot of close games with them. So last year they forced the Seahawks to completely abandon their offensive game plan and start throwing it. They ended up winning because of it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be mad if they only end up winning by a point, but I guess we'll see what happens. We'll talk more about it tomorrow. For tonight, What's on Tap?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Tito's Premium Vodka. So, folks, what's on tap?
Don't forget, you can join 710 ESPN Seattle tonight at Snoqualmie Casino for a live broadcast from 7 to 9 p.m. It is the final Hawks live show of the 2019 NFL season, hosted by Dave Wyman, Paul Moyer, and Michael Bumpus. You can learn more at 710sports.com/events.
Moyer's under the weather, though, so get well soon, Paul.
Yes, it's just Dave and Michael tonight.
Okay. We've got the Jets at the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. Thursday Night Football being. I think I like Thursday Night Football maybe more than anybody else.
Really?
I love it.
I believe it.
Like I used to be kind of indifferent. Like, oh, really? We're going to add another night of football to the week?
Yeah.
I've said it a million times. It's like a little reminder that the weekend.
I always notice
is,
when
is
we
just
have
a stone's throw away.
The huddle, and you start talking about what's on tap. Every single what's on tap during the huddle is obviously going to be Thursday Night Football, and there's just a little sparkle in your eye.
It's less than 3 hours away, Kyle.
Tom is Mr. Thursday Night Football. Secondarily, I would take Thursday Night Football over Monday Night Football.
Amen.
I would too.
I mean, think about it. You've watched football all day long Sunday. Mm-hmm. You just had it Thursday. You might have watched college all day Sunday. By the time you get to Monday, it's like...
Joe Tessitore pumped up about a punt.
Monday night's kind of like the fifth or sixth slice of pizza you didn't need. You're just kind of eating it, but you don't even taste it.
Which is sad because Monday Night Football used to have so much weight, and I do
used
think
to be the show.
I do think it has a lot to do with the broadcasting crew, honestly. And I'm leaving Booger out of this for Stacey.
You dare,
but.
Jake.
I mean, that's part of it, is enjoying the experience of the storytelling of, you know, making the game feel as big as possible. And I feel like that has been lacking for, you know, a little bit, honestly, since John Gruden, you know, went to the Oakland Raiders.
Well, yeah, and the matchups. I mean, when Thursday Night Football went to Fox, they started committing to better matchups. And then, obviously, Sunday Night Football, late in the year, you can flex them out to get a great matchup in there.
Correct.
Monday Night Football, you get whatever stinker they're rolling out there, and usually it is a stinker.
Giants-Eagles, man.
Oh, baby.
Here we go.
Question about what's on tap, though. So someone texted in saying, I really hope Stacey doesn't take her comments lightly because now I'm leaving Chris Carson in my fantasy lineup. One Kyle Brown currently beating everyone at work. It's unfortunate and I hate it because he has Lamar Jackson in his lineup. Question is, Lamar Jackson's injured with a quad injury. Should the Ravens rest him tonight?
Or like at least, I mean, they're facing the lowly Jets. You take a three possession lead in the third quarter, they might be putting that guy on.
You've already clinched
a
playoff
spot. That's not what she's asking, though. You're asking if they should play him, period, right?
Well, I think that's the question people are asking.
Yeah.
I would. I assume that Lamar Jackson wants to play. I don't think that he's not going to play.
He's going to play.
He's listed as questionable.
That's what I'm saying.
Says
I think there are, I think there are people wondering whether or not it's a bad idea if you've already clinched a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. If it was even close at this point, I would be playing it safe with Lamar Jackson because of just the only reason why is because the style in which he plays. Right, and the fact that you are calling actual run plays for your quarterback, and that's a big piece of your offense. And having him out there, you can't avoid it. It's part of your offense. You're going to have him run the football. And so that would be something that would give me consideration. And if I'm a coach, to keep him out. And also, you have a great defense that can win the game on its own, even if Lamar Jackson was out. So there's not as much pressure. I understand, though, Lamar Jackson, he wants to play, most likely going to play. It'd be the same thing if we were talking to Russell Wilson here in the same scenario. There's no way he would avoid, you know, playing in this game.
And not only that, but you want that number one seed because New England's still chasing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they had the number one seed already locked up, that'd be one thing. But with a couple games to go, still playing for something, I just don't see that happen. But maybe third quarter, if they're up 28-3,
yeah,
I could see it happening then for sure.
Yeah, probably.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from Bobby Wagner. That is next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
We're going to hear from Bobby Wagner talking to the press here in just a minute, but I want to ask you guys a question because I feel like this gets said every once in a while, but I don't want it to come from me because, as I've said to Stacey many a time, I really don't know how to evaluate linebackers. So is Bobby Wagner having a Bobby Wagner-like year? If not, what are you guys seeing?
To me, I look at a guy that when I watched the Rams game from start to finish, I go back to end of mid-third quarter, fourth quarter, where Bobby is, you can tell that he's starting to get upset with what's going on, and he starts playing very aggressive. And you see him making more and more tackles at the line of scrimmage. And to me, that's where I'm kind of judging Bobby Wagner's impact, is that he is a great player downhill – that he's going to have a presence, and that for running backs, I want them to be fearful of having to go against Bobby Wagner because he's going to be there, right there. They think there's a hole, and Bobby's going to be right there at the line of scrimmage to meet him at. And he did more of that late in the game, not at the beginning of the game. And so I've been waiting for Bobby to have play with that type of aggression. And so he has waited more this year than I think than any other year. And also in the passing game, he has had moments where he has been better, but there's been some real moments where he's been consistently beat in coverage behind him. So it's one of those things where it's hard to quantify as to if it's all on him or if it's because, you know, he's got so much that he's dealing with around him
and that's
that
what
it's affecting his play.
Yeah, I mean, you have not seen Bobby Wagner take over a game this year, but I wonder how much of that is also you're a veteran player on a defense that had a lot of moving pieces and a lot of struggling pieces. And you're the defensive captain, you're the middle linebacker. It's hard as an outsider to gauge where a play breaks down sometimes. Probably more often than people are willing to admit, it's hard to gauge where a play breaks down and whose assignment is whose. And so with the defensive line struggling so much, especially at the beginning of the year, the first couple weeks, it's hard not to wonder, is Bobby Wagner not as impactful because he is helping to fill in holes and make up for mistakes and missteps and what all goes into his, I don't want to say lack of presence this year. He's still leading the team in tackles. He's still, you know, a league leader in tackles,
right.
but is part of that difference there. Because you are kind of, I don't know, like acting as a security blanket a bit. For what was a struggle.
Don't you hate that
line?
When you get blamed for other people's shortcomings?
Well, sure, yeah, but it's
happens
it's
to me
weird.
Every
what are
day.
You saying, Tom?
Every day, huh?
No, just kidding.
It's interesting because you look at the stat sheet, and this Rams game is a great fact of it. 14 tackles. Man, that's great. That's great. The 14 tackles, that's a great number. It's a stat filler. But was it impactful? Did it have meaning? And you know, in this case, in the Rams game, it didn't. And that's where we're all waiting for Bobby to, you know, throughout the course of a game, feel his presence on the defensive side of the ball and be one of those guys that changes the climate of how a offense is playing the game.
All right, here's Bobby Wagner speaking with the media.
Congratulations, Bobby, being nominated for the Walter Payton Award.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's a huge honor. I was fortunate enough to watch a lot of guys before me do a lot of inspiring things, do a lot of things off the field in their communities, in this community. And so to be recognized with one of those guys is just pretty cool.
I know so much of what you do, you don't do it for this reason, to be nominated for an award like this. You have to do it somewhat anonymously. But personally, what do you get out of it that you feel like is, you know, gives you the most, you know, when you get to do stuff like this and interact with different people and give back in different ways?
I think that's the thing. I think it's being able to interact with people, being able to kind of show young kids or show anybody that, we reachable, you know what I mean? I think when you growing up, you know, when we was growing up, it was like, okay, how do you get in contact with Jordan or MJ or Kobe or all those dudes? They just seemed like they were kind of far away. So I just think it's cool to be able to inspire people to give back, not only with your money, but your time. And, you know, seeing the smiles on their faces when we do certain things has been amazing. So I think that's pretty much what I get out of it, is the smiles, the joy that it brings for the people, and the joy it brings for myself.
Is there anything you've done that you're maybe the most proud of?
I don't know. Like, I'm pretty much proud of a lot of things. I think, I would say this would be something that kind of means something to me because, I feel like if my mom was here, that's what she'd be most proud of. She'd be proud of the on-field stuff, but, the lives that you're affecting off the field would be something that I feel like she would appreciate a lot more, especially my pops, too.
Bobby, when you look back to the Rams in general, they have four straight games against you where they put up 450 yards of offense. Is there something about what they do against you that is tough for you guys to handle, to adjust to, or anything? What do you think has been the kind of common thread throughout?
I think it's just been us having to execute. I think they do a really good job of finding a weak spot in the defense, and you know we have to do a better job of kind of eliminating that. And whether it's the pass rush, whether it's the linebackers, corners, safeties, whatever, we just got to do better. I feel like it was definitely a learning experience. We need to do better, but the position we're in is a good one, and so we don't want that loss to overshadow that. And the only way it doesn't is if we learn from it.
Can you quantify the amount of impact that Christian McCaffrey has on the Panthers' offense?
I mean, you know, you can just tell by the film. You know, they're trying to get him the ball in the run game. They're trying to get him the ball in the pass game. I don't know what the stat is, but I think he has 80-something catches or something crazy like that from a running back. That's like receiver numbers, you know what I mean? So it just shows the versatility that they have or that he has and what they want to do with him. And so you guys definitely got to be, you know, on your game. I think last time we played him, he had a pretty good game. And so we got to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Nobody has more tackles in the league than you and Luke Kuechly going back to 2012. What have you learned about Kuechly and playing against him and getting to know him over the years?
He's just a really, really hard worker. Very, very intellectual linebacker. Makes a lot of plays. Very... talented. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch him play on film. I met him in Florida. We were training at IMG before we came into the draft, so I got to know him a little bit there. And we've kind of kept in touch a little bit. But he's an amazing player. Definitely, a linebacker that people can look to and be inspired by.
That's Bobby Wagner, the leader of this defense. Tom, Jake, and Stacey sum it up next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
That wave is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back.
We had Russell Wilson in here before, and I asked him about the MVP and whether or not that actually meant anything to him. I was a little surprised by the answer he gave. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think winning MVP is a great thing just because it's one of those things that you know, growing up as a kid, being 5'10", 5'11", from Richmond, Virginia, people thought I couldn't play football. I think you're not just setting a precedent for yourself, but you're setting it for others. And I think also, too, it's a testament to all the hard work you put in with the guru and other people. You know, when you think about you know, all the hard work you put into things, you want to be successful. You know, that's a sign of winning, you know, MVP, in my opinion. That's how I look at it. It's winning football.
In my opinion, I think it's going to be very difficult for him at this point to win the MVP, and I think most people would probably agree with me on that. But really, it's only because it's because of two things, really. Mm-hmm. It's Lamar Jackson and the season he's having, plus the last couple of games for Russell and the offense. Whatever you think of them, they haven't really been played at an MVP level, a true MVP level. So those are two things he's got going against him right there. But if Lamar Jackson goes out tonight against the Jets, and either he's hurt or he doesn't play well or some combination of both there, and that continues for the next couple of weeks until the end of the season and maybe into the playoffs, we'll see how that works out. Do you guys think that it's still possible for Russell to play himself back into it?
I think it's certainly
I think he's got enough time. I think he's got three to four games to do it.
I think it's still possible, but I think that the way that just the collective we in sports media measure insane success at the quarterback level, especially specifically for the MVP award, isn't always as like expansive as it should be. That said, including Lamar Jackson and his amazing skill set is, I think, a really cool step forward. It's not just saying you have to be this tall and a pocket passer and you have to be Tom Brady to be great. Recognizing that what Lamar Jackson is able to do is phenomenal is a cool step forward. That being said, I think that we still get sidetracked by like sexy numbers, and it's hard to...
You mean like Jared Goff?
Yes, exactly. A very sexual offense like the Rams. And I think that what Russell Wilson does really, really well, which is to make his team better, it's harder for people to quantify that.
Yeah, you look at it, and I would say that he has to play, you know, two pretty strong games and finish with a very strong game against the 49ers. I think that the 49ers game could have more weight than maybe we're giving it credit when it comes down to this MVP race. Because let's say the Seahawks go 13-3. I think people around the nation are willing to say that Russell doesn't have the same talent in terms of this team as Lamar Jackson does, you know, all across the board with the Baltimore Ravens.
You're talking about offense and defense.
Yes, I'm talking about as a collective group. And so it's, for that team to go 13-3, I think would be a huge feat to win the division versus the 49ers, who everybody around the country really buys into the fact that the 49ers are a very good football team. I think that could be something that gets him over the tipping point while Lamar Jackson is playing the Browns, the Steelers, you know, they're division games, but they're not quality wins when you really look at it. So that could play a factor into it. But I do agree that it is something that it's not a long shot, but it's going to take a lot for him to overtake it. And Lamar Jackson has two more touchdowns than Russell Wilson right now, and he's got 300 more yards of total offense currently. So there's definitely some ground that he's got to make up.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with him fully, but it was a really interesting point that Mike Salk made the other day when he was on with us, and he said, I'm summarizing, that the Seahawks are what he would think of as a 10-6 team. So to be at 10-3 and lose wasn't altogether devastating for him to see, because he's like, you are fortunate to be where you are. And in his mind, you are where you are because you've managed to make one better great play than you have made bad plays, or that you've had gotten in your own way. And he also attributed part of that success to taking a team that maybe in his mind isn't as good as its own record might be, 13-3, that part of that can be attributed to Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. And so I think that in itself, doesn't that literally make an MVP?
Yes, it does.
Isn't that the definition of it? So
that's interesting.
It depends, right? Do we look at an MVP as someone who makes his team much better than they are on paper? Or do we look at an MVP as someone who just has flashing
insane
kind of stats.
But those two things could be one and the same.
Exactly. You could look at Patrick Mahomes and say he threw 50 touchdowns. No one else did that. You could look at Lamar Jackson and say he's breaking records, it feels like, every game. No one else is doing that. Those are still very fair points. So, I mean, really.
That's an interesting point that Mike makes. I think he's not wrong. Whether they feel like truly a 10-6 team or not, the problem with 10-6 is that you can be 10-6 and win your last four, get hot, go into the playoffs, and get yourself right. Yeah. Or you can start off 9-1 and then stagger to the finish line and be like, what happened? You know, 10-6 can mean different things. Mm-hmm. 13-3 usually doesn't. Usually you end up there because you're a rock-solid team. You've got talent, you've got good coaching, and you haven't just gotten luck. Yeah, you've made a couple of plays here and there, or you've gotten lucky here and there, but for the most part, you've made your own luck. You put yourself in position to take advantage of that. Don't forget, by the way, you can join Bob, Dave, and Moore for a live broadcast from the Mariners team store in Bellevue tomorrow from 3 to 6 p.m. The Mariners team store. Whose jersey number do I want to pick up this year?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to pick up Evan White? He's going to start with the team, right?
Why do you get Evan White's?
Go for Evan
Think
White.
About it.
What do you mean, why?
No, I mean, why don't you?
Oh, I thought you said,
why do you get it?
Why do I get it?
Oh, why do you get it? Why don't
What's
I?
So
why
special
do you
about
and not
you?
Me? Yeah.
I'm the only
what
one
makes
who can
you better?
Wear it.
You could totally pull
you
that
go,
off,
Evan, why you know Kyle Lewis jersey?
Yeah.
Oh,
exciting.
Kyle Lewis
Kyle
would be a
Lewis,
good one.
Man. He was
hearing Shed Long is going to be the plans at second base. That'd be a good one. Flashy guy.
You can get a customized one that says Wassel.
Oh, God. I'd never
do it.
Double zero. Wassel.
Absolutely do that.
Evan White jerseys for everybody. All right, we're back tomorrow. Do we have a game show planned for tomorrow?
Yes, we do.
Panthers.
Oh, we got, and I think we got some good sound of that. I would like to tomorrow at some point pay homage to one of the best team songs I've ever heard.
Oh, look, Ken Woodley?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Whoa!
Kyle, that wasn't even a sound effect. That came out of your mouth right now.
Can we dial that up, please?
I'm perturbed.
I don't know
with
if we're going to need
sharp teeth and claws.
Let's go.
God.
That's tomorrow on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.